Hello and welcome back to the DieCast. After our way too long hiatus, we're happy to be back here on oneofus.net. I am your host, Jacob Hall, and to my left is my ever loyal, ever faithful, ever beautiful co-host, Mr. Daniel Kalbacher.
I'm glad you noticed. I've been styling my hair differently recently, and I just feel like everyone, I don't know, that I haven't been getting the attention that I feel like I deserve.
Well, what kind of attention do you want?
Oh, no, that was the good attention. I'm beautiful. That was what you told me, right? You meant that, right?
Right. Well, who's this person to your left? She is new to our show.
I like that you keep saying to your left as if people can see that.
We're going in a circle. We're going in a circle. We're
going
in
a circle.
I mean, it's a rectangular table. But to my left is Stacey Sasson, who will introduce herself now.
Hi, I'm Stacey Sasson. I am an animator. I do both 2D and 3D, and I love RPGs and everything of that sort.
And who is to your left, Stacey?
This is Nicholas Fofi. Introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Nick Fofi. I'm a writer slash programmer slash amateur game designer. And I like RPGs, strategy games, big thematic board games with tons of little pieces.
You are right at home. And across from you is the DieCast's favorite lovable mascot, Mr. Tyler Major. How are you, Tyler?
Oh, I'm doing all right.
What game has pissed you off in the past 2 weeks?
Rex kind of pissed me off.
Well, we'll get to Rex in a second. What is the last non-Rex game to make you scream and shout at my kitchen table?
Let me think about it. I would have to say that it was probably... Manhattan Project made me really mad. Because Natalie... Natalie immediately went after my scientists and started stealing my people and my buildings immediately. Like, we had barely started the game, and she was like, I'm taking all of that.
For those of you at home who haven't played it, Manhattan Project is a worker placement game that simulates the Cold War, and more specifically the escalation of building nuclear weapons. And even though it's worker placement, which is a genre that usually is all about building your own engine and being alone and minding your own business, it gives you opportunities to be very mean to each other. Who else here has played Manhattan Project?
I have.
And do you like it?
Oh, I love that game. But then, of course, I love anything that's, like, tangentially World War II or Cold War related. Like, yeah, just really anything in that genre I'll pick up and play.
Yeah, in the near future, we're definitely going to have a Cold War episode where we'll discuss that and Fortress America and Twilight Struggle, among other things. So look forward to that in the future. Nick and Stacey, have you guys played The Manhattan Project?
I have not.
I have not either, and I don't think I've heard of it until you just mentioned it.
Well, you guys have some homework to do. What have you been playing recently, Nick?
Recently, we played Rex. We played Fury of Dracula. I've been playing a lot of Netrunner.
Tell us about Netrunner. We've mentioned it on the show before, but you're the first person who's not me to be excited about Netrunner.
Okay, Netrunner is an asymmetrical card game designed by Richard Garfield, same guy who did Magic way back in the 90s. One person plays an evil corporation trying to push its agendas onto the world, often have to do with control or dominance or just making tons of money. One person plays a hacker who tries to run on their servers and steal their agendas and basically cause them to have a bad day.
And it's all in this really cool cyberpunk universe, sort of Fantasy Flight Games is Blade Runner, so to speak, right?
Yes, it's in the Android universe, which also has the board game Android, the original, is very much like a Blade Runner type game where you play sort of film noir detectives trying to track down a murderer in the future.
Yeah, I think Android's a game we're going to have to talk about in the future because it's such a game that has divided so many people. And I think there's a lot of interesting things going on in it.
It's divided me, really. I can see, I've got it to the table a couple times, and I absolutely love it, but I can see where it definitely could use a couple of improvements.
All right, Stacey, what are you playing?
I have been playing Android with him recently. I've been playing Dungeon Pets, which I really adore.
Do you worship at the altar of Vlada Shivatel like I do?
I don't think so. I was never invited.
Ooh, bad
sort
choice.
Sort of do.
You're kicked off the show.
Thank you.
So far, we love Dungeon Lords, Dungeon Pets, and Mage Knight.
You guys play Mage Knight? I still haven't gotten to play Mage Knight. Jacob won't let me play Mage Knight. I think it's because he thinks I'm going to throw the board.
Oh man, I think I have a thing here actually. All right, so correct me if I'm wrong, but you're not a huge fan of Galaxy Trucker.
I haven't played it. I mean, I've seen it, and I see the appeal. I just don't know if I would be into it.
I really, really wanted to start a fight. I just don't want to see that happen.
I mean, and... we can. It won't be visible, but I can throw a few punches.
Yeah, we're big fans here of Mr. Vlada Shivatel here at the DieCast. He's behind Space Alert and Galaxy Trucker and all your favorite extremely complicated, chaotic games that are ultimately just so wonderful and funny. And they scratch the itch for people who want to play super complicated games that still have a light touch. So, Daniel, what have you been playing other than Rex, which is a subject of the page?
Which is, yeah, the thing we all played together at this table. had another go at Battlestar Galactica recently.
Oh, yeah.
And for the second time in a row, I was the Cylon, which was... that's the best way to play that
game. Sorry, there was something that pissed me off about that game, I just remembered. And that was the fact that I told you guys at the beginning of the game that Daniel was the Cylon, and nobody listened to me, and guess what? Daniel was the fucking Cylon.
I feel like perennially I'm just the Cylon. Like, I actually, part of that game, actually, was when we were picking characters, I was like, well, I'd like to be the president. I think that would be fun. So, I had never been the president before, and I get it. And I'm like, alright, cool. And then I immediately start thinking, man, if I was the Cylon, that'd be great. Like, that'd be crazy. And then immediately got the Cylon card, and I was good to go. It was a good time.
For those of you who are new to gaming or just popping in casually, Battlestar Galactica is, in fact, based on the Sci-Fi Channel reboot of the classic TV series. And it casts everyone working together as members of the crew of Battlestar Galactica. But one person is secretly a traitor. And in our last game, Daniel was a traitor. And he may talk about how much fun he had and how great it was to sabotage us. But in the end, humanity did prevail, you motherfucker.
Barely. You were in a bad, bad way at the end of that game.
We put ourselves in a bad way to win the game. Huge difference, my good friend.
One of my last games with Battlestar Galactica, I got the first time pleasure of being the double Cylon.
Oh, I hated it. That pissed me off so much.
This was a 5-player game, so 2 definite Cylons. I was a Cylon from the start, and I became the double Cylon in the sleeper phase. So that was pretty interesting. We had a Baltar, a Gaius Baltar in the group. Gaius Baltar has a once per game ability where you can look at the loyalty cards, which determine if a player is human or Cylon. Look all their loyalty cards once per game. And so the person playing Baltar looked at my cards and saw 2 Cylon cards, and she said, I was a Cylon, and I'm like, you Cylon traitor. And so I was just accusing everybody else of being a Cylon because I couldn't really do anything else.
But she had me tricked. Like, I didn't know if it was her or it was you, and I was retarded, and I was going to go execute you or do something like that. And you're like, oh, executive order me to go blah, 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 and blow something up. And I did it. Then he fucking revealed himself. And he's like, here you go. You can be a Cylon now. And it pissed me off so much. And I was playing at Starbucks. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to shoot myself off into space and just fuck everyone here. I was so angry.
I feel like that game...
We did win, but I was trying so hard to be an awesome little human, and no.
I feel like that game, like, it really only plays best with 5 players, because we did the 4-player version recently where I was the Cylon, and yes, humanity did prevail, Jacob, but,
It was crazy hard.
It was crazy hard for you guys, yes, it was. Like, it was, and it was I feel like, because this was the second time I've played it, and I guess in the past several months... And prior to that, I had only played it once, like, several years ago, and, I was the Cylon both times. But, it's one of those things where I feel like in the 5-player game, I didn't quite have the hang of being the Cylon quite yet, but in the 4-player game we had recently, man, I could have used that help, just that one extra person out there.
Yeah.
Like, it would have been great. It would have been a lot of fun.
Nick, since you're a Battlestar veteran, Lucy, I've assumed you've played it more times than most people at this table have, I have a question for you.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever I play, I always remove the Cylon Sympathizer cards because I hate them so much. What are your views on the Cylon Sympathizer cards?
I haven't had the opportunity to play with them that much. We had, like, I picked up the second expansion pretty soon, which I think is the one that had the Cylon leaders in them. And so our even-numbered person was generally a Cylon leader. Usually I manage to get 5-player games, 7-player games. One time, I stretched out using all the cards I could to get, like, a 9 or 10 player game, which isn't technically allowed by the rules, but...
Who's stopping you?
Yeah, and don't do that. because it takes, just about forever to get around to you again.
See, I'm so satisfied by the base game, I've never felt the need to buy any of the expansions. Are anything, what is necessary of the expansions?
Necessary? I mean, not much is necessary. There's some fun stuff. There's the Pegasus in the second expansion, which is another ship that, if you like blowing up ships, then that's the one for you. Exodus adds, I believe, the Cylon fleet, which instead of random Cylon attacks occurring during crises, you have the Cylon fleet sort of jumping back and forth between their between the Galactica and their own fleet, sort of chasing you all the time. So if you don't kill the Cylons, they're just more and more and more will show up. And then the latest expansion, I haven't played much of at all, but it adds the Demetrius and mission cards.
So like in the base game, you can be on Galactica and you run around as your character and you do things, and like if you're being attacked, you can shoot from the ship out to them, or you can get in a ship yourself and fly out and like kill some Cylons. So when you're saying that they add these other ships, are they just other like new boards, brand new boards, so that you can fly over to those ships just like you can with the presidential ship that is there as well?
Yeah, exactly. They're whole new boards. So like Galactica is laid out as a series of locations. You have communications, you have the FTL, you have weapons, you have the Admiral's quarters, and so Pegasus is just a whole other board.
Gotcha.
It has like the engine room, the beloved airlock, which if you liked the brig before, whew. Airlock is exactly what it does in the show. You put people in it and you space them. which is what the expansion adds is the concept of execution.
That's a thing we need to play, actually. I'm going to go ahead and put that down as a future game we're playing.
Well, yeah. We just spent about 8 minutes talking about one Fantasy Flight Games science fiction game. We're actually here to talk about two other ones. We're here to talk about the
good segue.
Thank you. I'm a Segway expert. We're here to talk about Twilight Imperium and Twilight Imperium Rex, the two games set in Fantasy Flight Games' big, sprawling, Star Wars-inspired sci-fi universe. If you've been in any game shop, you've probably seen Twilight Imperium. It is the game box the size of a small car. And once you get all the expansions together, it weighs about the size. It weighs about as much as a small car. And Rex is a smaller version. It's actually a prequel to Twilight Imperium. But I wanted to start with Twilight Imperium because I remember when I first got into gaming, like 5-6 years ago, it was one of those games where I saw it and said, man, I want to play it. There's so many pieces, so many things going on. It looks incredible. And I didn't actually start playing it until maybe about a year and a half, 2 years ago. And I'm glad it took me that long because there's so much going on. I'm wondering if I could have appreciated it when I was a new gamer. And I could appreciate the subtleties and what it brings to not only gameplay, but the group dynamics. Stacey, you were the first, when we played Twilight Imperium a couple weeks ago, you were the only person at the table who had never played before. So I want to hear your first reaction upon seeing this massive 8-person galaxy spread across a table with every single insert on it to be able to accommodate it.
It was gorgeous. Like, I absolutely loved all the little ships and everything on it, and I really just wanted to take over everything. I mean, I didn't get a chance to take over Mechatol Rex just because that wasn't in my... wasn't as easy since you were controlling it. I was dealing with my own battle with Tyler with this black hole that got placed, and so it was a whole battle.
That was no way my fault.
That was, of course, no way his fault. Who was right next to me?
See, the metagame in Twilight Imperium begins in setup, because your galaxy map is set up in hexes, and everyone's home systems are at the very edge, and there are various planets scattered around, and everyone is given a stack of systems, and you build them all together, taking turns. So if you have a very viable planet, you want to put it near you. If you have a black hole, you want to put it near your enemy. So the grudges start immediately. Everyone starts wheeling and dealing before the game's even begun.
I was about to say, one of the things I enjoy the most is when everyone obviously has their hexes and they want to save the best planets for themselves. But inevitably, at least a few people will screw this up to the point where the only viable place to put a good planet they have saved for themselves is near someone else. And so the wheeling and dealing begins of, if I give you this, what are you going to do for me? Because I'm giving you, this card has 3 planets on it. This has so many resources, and I don't want to give it to you. What are you going to give me? And, you know, as you were saying, Jacob, all of this begins before actual gameplay.
And what's even more interesting is once you're in it, I know this wasn't the same in the first and second editions. The edition you see of Twilight Imperium in stores today is a 3rd edition. And the first 2 editions, if I recall correctly, maybe Nick can actually correct me on this, were more straightforward war games. Whereas 3rd edition has sort of a Euro game bent where you're playing for victory points. So actually, sometimes picking wars and picking fights is the last thing you want to do. You should be avoiding fights and trying to convince people to start wars for you instead. So I guess to tie back to our conversation from earlier, in a way, Twilight Imperium is a great Cold War game. Tyler, would you agree?
Oh, yes, absolutely. With me, the last time we played, I decided... I think I got the pirates last time. And I was really happy about that because... Every race I had gotten before weren't necessarily peaceful races, but they were races that didn't necessarily require me to be aggressive. And I really wanted to play the game aggressive. I wanted to try. I really, really wanted to try that because it's, in general, I like to kind of hang back in Twilight Imperium, see what plays out. I think I was the Sardak Nor the first time, which are aggressive, but I had no idea how to play them. And then I got the goblin people, who I forget, the tribe goblin
Tribes
people.
Of Israel.
Yeah, and they're all like sneaky and stealthy and stuff like that. But I got the pirates, and it was so much fun just being able to sort of. I saw that Nick basically placed a wormhole right next to me and said, "Here you go, you have backdoor to Stacy's civilization," and I was like. Do I want to... And actually, at first I said, yes, that's exactly what I'm doing.
I declared war
before,
we're still setting up
before the game even started. eventually, though, I ended up having more trouble with my neighbors, which is, I think, how the game can go. I mean, it's a very easy snowball effect in the game is, at first you want to try to be friends with your neighbors, and I tried that, but then, of course, poor Rod came in with his human civilization and decided to take one of my planets that I was not on, but I still claimed, and I said, well, sorry, dude, you're next.
If Twilight Imperium is a novel, if every game you sit down and play is an epic 1,000-page 1983 paperback novel that you find in the 7th grade library, because that's what it feels like to me, then the tale of Rod's human forces is one of the greatest tales I've ever seen in all of science fiction. Rod's not here to defend himself, but I will say he expanded fast, expanded brilliantly, and fell so fucking hard. Fell so beautifully hard. And it was his first time playing, and he did not build up his defenses well enough. Nick, you are the veteran here of Twilight Imperium, and you won pretty handily. Tyler and Daniel were a turn or two away from winning, but you ended that game as fast as you could. Can you talk about the speed and how sometimes ending quickly is the best way to win that game?
In that game, a lot of things broke my way, and it started like right at setup. I had that black hole, which I placed to connect Stacy and Tyler. And I mean, a normal game of Twilight Imperium, you know, you're sitting in a circle and you have, you know, a neighbor on each side. And so I introduced a third neighbor by connecting, you know, very close home systems, because Stacy was an aggressive military race. I was the University of Zul'Nar, which are the space nerds.
Fish people.
Yeah, space fish nerds. They have a lot of technology, but they have a minus to every single attack roll they have. So they have to tech up just to be on par with everybody else. And that's actually snowballed for me because I was able to tech up and keep teching up. And there was definitely turns where I was getting 3 technologies every turn, which is a hugely fast pace. That was due to, you know, their specialty and their leaders. The wormholes that kept sort of, you know, a cold war between Tyler and Stacy. And then I had, again, a planet that I was able to put right next to my home system. It had tech specialties, which give you discount on technologies, which comboed with my scientist leaders, which expand those or improve those specialties, and they had, you know, huge resources. And I went into it knowing that the game was about victory points, and that's something everybody misses, including me. That was pretty much the first game I've ever won, because the first few games, you're like, you still look at the board, and it feels like space risk. You do pretty much what, you know, Rod did. I did that my first game, where you look, I expand as fast as humanly possible to get as many resources. But it's not space risk. It's not an all-out war game.
It is space calculus risk.
Rod unfortunately served as a sort of victory points farm for me. I used him for quite a few victory points. I used the Imperial 2 card quite a bit to my advantage in that game, too. It was a underserved card, and there were 2 different turns. What the Imperial 2 card does is normally we have these set of public objectives that at the end of each round, each person can score 1 of them. The Imperial 2 card lets you score as many as you qualify for. And there were two different rounds where I scored 3 and 4 points respectively out of 10, which the first time when I rocketed in the lead, I thought I would get absolutely drowned because I was way ahead of everybody. But the great thing about Twilight Imperium, it's so huge, so much going on, that you're always worried about your own wedge of space. And I was super surprised nobody just came in and tackled me.
I think everyone seems to focus on their own little corner. And in a thematically appropriate way in Twilight Imperium, you're so far away from the person across the table from you that you can't quite know what they're doing until it's too late. And my favorite moment from last game, even though I didn't win, I will always remember that I made an alliance with my friend Laura, who played the game like 8.5 months pregnant, and God bless her, we were there for 7 hours. And at the very beginning, I said, let's be allies. She said, sure. And we're old gaming buddies, and we can read each other really well. We both knew that was going to last. And so it was, in a way, it was like, for me, my saga was a saga of a friendship being born in the galaxy. Tyler's saga was of screaming very loud for people to break our alliance and for us to attack each other because he was not having our friendship.
Well, because from the first fucking round, you guys are like, we're never going to attack each other the entire game. And I'm sitting there telling Laura, that is not beneficial to you whatsoever. Like, he is right there. He's leaving his home system completely unguarded. Go take it. Like, I was trying to convince her to do that. And it got to the point where Laura and I never actually, I don't think, officially went to war. But I think we had one of... But what was interesting is at the end of the game, it was really interesting because Laura and I typically, when we've played this in the past, we just, for whatever reason, get in battles. But this time was very interesting because we almost did the entire game up until the last few rounds in which we both realized that we weren't going to get our secret objectives until we allowed each other to. And we used each other's positioning to help ourselves get the secret objectives and then call a peace treaty, basically. And I thought that was really interesting because I had never personally done that in the game before, and I'd never really seen that happen in a case where people were like, okay, I'll let you get your points, I get my points, and then we'll just move on and go from there. By that point, Nick had won the game, so it didn't really matter. But it was still a very interesting situation because suddenly I was put in a situation where I could possibly win the game. I was very close. I ended up being much closer than I thought I was going to be. And so it was that was a very strange situation that I did not expect whatsoever. But yes, I firmly believe that anybody allying with Jacob at the end of the game really should never ever try to do that.
There was this huge deflating feeling when Nick won the game so early.
Yeah,
because
round five
this
or six, right?
When
you're 9-hour game of Twilight.
Yeah. Well, this is the thing. It's like when you're playing Twilight Imperium, you block off your day. I mean, that's what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. And so I had blocked off my entire day. All right, I'm going to play Twilight Imperium all day. It's going to be great. And at the end of that game, I remember looking at my watch and being like, oh, do I like make other plans now? I mean, I have like several hours of things I can still do.
My girlfriend called me to check and see how I was doing. Uh-huh. And she goes, so how's Galactic Domination going? And this was about like 7:30, and I go, it's actually over.
We were dominated.
I lost again for the fifth time in a row. And she was like, but doesn't everybody technically lose in that game? And she was like, and I was like, you know what? Yeah, I mean, there's only one winner, and it's 12 hours long, and it happens about once every 2 months. So I guess kind of everybody is a loser. But at the same time, I feel like everybody's a winner, though. Because you get to create a story.
Stop that third grade bullshit. No one's a winner.
Hey man, I always try to play my race. I really do. I always try to play the race as not that they're intended to be, but like I try to put myself in the situation where if I'm the sneaky goblin people, then I'm going to try to be sneaky, you know. And if I'm a pirate people, I'm going to start declaring war before.
See,
the
I always
even
appreciate
started.
When you put the makeup on and the prosthetics in every game. It's really rather entertaining.
I could do without the full frontal nudity, though.
Hey, it's not my fault. The fucking rat people. All right, I pulled the rat people up. All right.
See, I just feel
people.
Like
They're
you
weird.
Selectively picked which one you wanted to play as. I mean, some of them were wearing some clothes, and the one you picked was not.
Yeah, well, hey, I like to go all out.
So, as you have picked up on, if you're listening, this Twilight Imperium is a long, long game. So long that a 7.5 hour long game was a short walk in the park for us. So, but if you do get the 10 hour mark, if things do drag on, what's really fascinating, what separates this from most war games, is that it really becomes a war of attrition. It's not just how is my strategy, how are my cards, it's can I stay awake, can I stay focused. I've seen good gamers reach hour 12 of Twilight Imperium and just start nodding off, and they lose the game not because they're bad gamers, but because they don't have the stamina, they don't have the physical toughness to actually endure the game.
Don't have the caffeine reserves.
He shall remain nameless, but a very close friend of mine started falling asleep between turns, only awaking to move his ships around a little bit and go back to sleep. He does not have what it takes to rule the galaxy.
I have been so tired after, because we played earlier, there were roughly 14, maybe 18 hour games, this is with, you know, everybody being new. I have accelerated my own loss on purpose, just because I was so fatigued, so tired, so ready for it to be over, that I would just throw ships at walls of dreadnoughts and going, yeah, whoops.
And it's a really hard game to lose. I think it's really hard to, straight up, get annihilated in that game, like, get taken out, because you have so many opportunities to come back. So, like, even if you're doing kind of crappy, like, round three, like, maybe say there was a huge war round two and you didn't expect it and your civilization got wiped out except for your home planets, don't worry too much. I mean, you could, like, come back, theoretically, and do pretty well.
That's technically good game design, because you look at a lot of the older class, I put class in quotation marks on, like, war games like Risk, once you're out, you're out, and you're watching your friends play for two more hours. Twilight Imperium makes it hard to eradicate you, and if you do want to come back, if you have the effort, if you don't want to just put in the towel, it actually is, you can come back. And
it can be pretty epic,
yeah, too. With the right amount of drive and the right amount of time left in the game, because that's also a very crucial element. You really can come back from, like, utter annihilation.
I want to go on a quick tangent, because talking about game length reminded me of why people hate gamers. I was in a unnamed game shop here in Austin, Texas, recently, and someone brought up Twilight Imperium to the guy working by the counter and said, oh, this is a long game, like 10 hours, right? And he goes, no, that's a short game by my standards. I consider games that are less than 24 hours to be of medium length. You should try some real war games. And I'm like, fuck you. This is why our hobby is so inaccessible, when it is actually so accessible.
So I feel like that's, like, exactly the right scenario to just keep in your back pocket a giant foam middle finger. Like, just to let the person know exactly how much they should shut the fuck up.
I would love that. I need one of
So I'm legitimately curious now, because they're talking about gaming culture real quick, and we'll go back to Twilight Imperium in a matter of minutes, I promise. You can fast forward if you don't like talking about human beings and more important things.
But I'm putting a timer on this right now.
So Stacey, when did you get in the games? I know how I got in the games. I know how Tyler, Daniel, and Nick came in the games. What was your introduction to games?
When I was born, basically, my mom worked all the time, and it was me and my dad, so it was, he took me around as, like, a baby to his D&D sessions, and literally, I would just watch him play games, like, on the Atari and on the NES, so I got introduced very young, which, it was weird growing up, just because a lot of people are like, you know, that's stupid, don't play video games, I didn't have friends so much, but when I came home, my dad's like, here's a controller, we're going to play this, and it's going to be awesome. And that was my introduction.
Right, here's the question I'm going to ask, and it's one I'm just going to throw it out there. How difficult has it been to be in this hobby when it's so full of douchebags?
You just look past it. I mean, I've never had a problem so much with that. People just, if they're going to be mean, they're going to be mean. I'm one of those, like, I don't give a crap what people think, so deal with it.
See, since the rest of us at this table are fat and or too skinny dorks, I'm always fascinated when somebody who seems like a real person is playing games with us. Okay, I was about to Twilight Imperium, guys. I'm sorry.
You're saying I'm not a real person?
No.
That was really mean.
No.
That was just dehumanizing.
That's okay, because I'm not a real person.
All right, listeners at home,
no, have that right on the head.
Listeners at home, please write in. Tell us which of us sounds most like a real person.
That's, oh, please do.
It won't be me.
I was competing for that.
That's the reason of this podcast, guys.
We're competing for the Pinocchio Cup at this point, guys.
Okay, so let's talk about our favorite Twilight Imperium stories. Daniel, of all the games you played, what moment rings out in your brain as the big dramatic turn that excites you the most and gets you to want to play again?
See, that's the thing. That's like the worst question, because I've actually talked about it on this podcast before. It is the first time I played. you and I had an alliance. You backstabbed me by going through my territory, and I think you took my homeworld when we had an alliance, allowing Tyler to come in and annihilate both of us.
By the way, I'm just going to go ahead and say that's also my favorite moment.
Is that also your favorite
moment? That is also my favorite moment because it was so satisfying.
Well, and I imagine it would have to be, and that's the thing, because it was the first time I had ever played, and we're doing this, and like, I don't think I was too far away from victory, but it wasn't like imminent victory or anything like that.
Yeah.
And Jacob decided that I was too close or something bad was going on. I don't know exactly what his thought process was, because with that one move, he killed us both. Like, he sacrificed himself to stop me because of some misguided notion that I was getting too powerful, or I don't know. What was your idea behind that, actually?
I think my basic idea was pretty much this would be really, really, really funny.
You know what? I do kind of recall him being like, I think this is a stupid move, but it's going to be funny. So I'm going to do it anyway.
I mean, and that
I had been waiting the entire game. Like, I don't think I had been doing much at all that game. I think I was pretty much out of it by that point because I couldn't get anything moving or whatever. But I did have a nice sizable fleet that wasn't doing anything. And it was like, oh, there's this nice remnant fleet that is barely existing in a home system. I'm just going to go there.
Well, that was the thing. It was like, it was immediate. It was like, you can see the opening he created. Not only, because that was the thing. The fight actually diminished his forces as well. And then your forces on the border were so numerous that it defied logic. It really did. And it was funny because I was thinking about it earlier, you know, just different moments in gaming or, you know, as we were talking about. And I'm kind of amazed at how bitter I still am about that one move. Like, and this is, I want to say at least, this is like 6 months ago, at least.
Yeah, it was the game before this last one, I think.
No, it was the game before that.
Wow.
Yeah, that was quite a while ago.
You do hold grudges, man. That's crazy.
I don't normally hold grudges, but
you gotta relax. This is coming from me.
Yeah,
you gotta relax.
I gotta relax. I'll go to your school of relaxation.
This is why everyone hates me in games, by the way.
What meditation techniques do you use?
No, everybody hates you, Jacob. Everybody goes for you first.
Yeah, the unfortunate truth of it is that in my immediate circle of original gamer friends, I was a guy who introduced games to them, so I became, oh my god, he must be the expert. And we have to make sure he doesn't win. And because my playing style generally is what is the most entertaining and memorable thing to do, as opposed to what's going to help me win, I have become known as the guy you go kill first, because he will kill you if you don't kill him.
I never trust Jacob.
Well, my favorite Twilight Imperium moment came when I was holding Mechatol Rex, and my friend Luke launched a massive fleet, including two War Suns, which is Twilight Imperium's ripoff of Death Stars, at me. He seemed so confident. He seemed like, oh, here's my army. Here's my army. Deal with that. And wiped him off the board, and it felt so good. It feels so good to hurt your friends.
Well, I mean, it does. I mean, that's really what we're all aiming for, I feel like, in the end. Is just, you know, to inflict pain upon those closest to us.
That's why I play games, right? To inflict pain?
Yeah, I really can't disagree with that. That's a solid reason.
I think it's I think the game to Twilight Imperium is an interesting kind of look at, maybe not necessarily meeting people for the first time. Like, I feel like you guys got a very different look at me than you may have, like, in something else. But,
well, see,
like,
this is why I like playing with you. Because we were talking earlier, you know, Jacob and I, about, you know, inflicting pain on those closest to us and how fun it is. It is so easy to emotionally scar you.
Yes, it is.
If I go into a game, I know, I'm going to give you a lasting memory that will carry on at least several months from now.
Yeah, and then I'll completely forget about it. And then it'll be, because then it'll be replaced by some other lasting,
I feel like one day you're going to be in a therapy session and you're going to crack, and all of the bile of every time you've been betrayed and harmed and just otherwise, you know, just bad things have happened to you in games, it's all going to spit out all over this poor, poor therapist who is going to need a raise right after that.
Okay. I'd like to see that.
Yeah, I'd like to see that,
I
too.
Mean, this is, I want to say, this is going to be 10 years.
10 years? You're going to give me 10 years?
I'm going to give you 10 years because you have to accumulate more of these scars.
Okay.
And
yeah,
then,
I need
then eventually the dam breaks and it'll be beautiful.
Or it'll happen in a Twilight Imperium game and I'll win.
That's a Tyler.
We all know that's not happening. That's never going to happen.
The day Tyler wins Twilight Imperium is the day we all let him win out of pity.
So we've all won several... Once again, 10 years in the future, we've all won several times at this point. Tyler is just in his goblin costume in the corner with the prosthetic ears, the nose, totally nude. And we just... We say, you know what? We'll throw him a bone. And that's the day. That's actually... That'll be the last day we ever see him.
And then I'll do my nude goblin war dance. And it'll be all worth it.
He'll sprout wings and vanish into the night. Stacey, you've had one game under your belt. But what do you remember from your game? What's your most dramatic moment?
I find it most exciting going into battle. Just because you see what you have that you've been working up so hard for. And you see the other person... And you don't necessarily know you're going to win just because someone else has more and you don't. It literally is based on how you roll. And that can be really nerve-wracking. Like, say, like, you mess up. You're like, oh, crap, I'm going to die. But then the other person messes up. Then it'll go, like, back and forward and back and forward. And you're like, I have one ship left. And somehow you land, like, roll, like, hits multiple times. You're like, oh, shit, I just won. And it's just a fantastic feeling.
What's really interesting, and I'd like you guys to chime in on this, too, is that there are... great war games out there like Game of Thrones, which we discussed in our last episode, where every single battle is entirely skill-based. There is no luck in Game of Thrones. There is still a die as you roll in battle in Twilight Imperium. But since the game is so big and there's so many things going on, that the die ends up feeling okay because unlike Game of Thrones, there's so much more going on beyond that direct combat. What do you guys think about the die in Twilight Imperium?
I think there's so much you can do to help yourself in the game. Like, yeah, it's going to... There's always going to be the element of luck with rolling the dice, but there's so many technologies that you can get, and there's so many different ways. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's so many different ways of winning the game.
Well, you can tip the odds in your favor. Yeah. As you said, so many different technology bits with just racial abilities as well, playing to the race you're playing. Because, I mean, each race obviously plays very differently, as Nick was talking about before. He had to overcome the fact that in combat, his race was way far behind everyone else, and the only way to catch up was to tech up completely, which he did so very well. And
his whole sheet
was... This is the thing. In this game, I teched up really well. I couldn't touch Nick. Like, and obviously, this also has a lot to do with the race he was playing, the science space nerds. But, yeah, there are a lot of things you can do to make the game work for you.
What about you, Nick? What's your favorite Twilight Imperium moment?
I don't remember previous games before this last one because it's kind of been so long. I had a couple little moments, like being able to like swim in my pile of tech cards like Swoop and Chuck. I liked being paid by the Human Federation to do what I was going to do anyway. There was a point where I was given trade goods to pull out of a planet that I was just going to do that turn, which is nice. But I really, not to like harp on it or anything, but my winning turn, which was like four victory points at once.
Can you describe what victory tastes like in extreme detail?
No. So it was, I completed objectives. They were both military objectives. They were winning space battles and winning land battles. Like they were the stage two objectives, which were much more difficult. And so I just I had to send my nerds in my best space armor and space sticks to go fight these battles that they were barely fit for, and pulling off was extremely clutch. I had those rolls that, like Stacey was saying, I had two ace fighter pilots who rolled tens to take down a ship just before they were obliterated, and yeah, so being able to pull out all those battles. Was a pretty exciting moment. Also exciting because I knew if I lost any of them, I was hosed. All my forces, everything I've been planning towards, it would be like almost starting over. It was a huge, a huge push for me.
I was very confused when you were like, "And I win." I was very confused because I was like, well, can you win this early? Is that even possible?
For those of you at home, Tyler just motioned a card being turned over. So that completes the picture of him doing the "and I win" because Tyler, people can't see you, man.
I know.
Well, it goes back to, like I was saying earlier, that weird empty feeling where I was just like, wait, it's over? And actually, I think I remember at one point you just kind of reluctantly being like, oh, well, yeah, I mean, I guess I win. Yeah. Well, I think we were trying to what were we trying to do at the time? Some sort of upkeep at the end of the turn. And it's like, oh, well, you don't have to do that. Don't bother.
Because it's really because there's been so many times where I've been at that point where I feel that, have that feeling in my gut is like victory is imminent, and I've totally ruined it by making some kind of miscalculation that sets me back, you know, halfway to the game. So I was like, I had to make sure it was real. Like, I had to process for a little while. I was like, okay, I'm pretty sure this is happening. Plus, as my first win,
That I imagine that tastes very sweet. No one else at this table actually knows that feeling.
No, nope.
You are the only one,
and perhaps never will.
It's true
because it's a game. Well, it's a game that you can't play. You can't play it like every week. It's too long.
Technically, you can, but we have lives.
Yeah,
do we?
I wouldn't play it every week. Let's put it that way.
Well, as we've hinted at, Twilight Imperium is a sandbox of a game. There's so much going on, so many details, so many ways to play. It is the exact antithesis of its sister game, Rex. Segway. Let's talk about Rex now, guys. Rex is a much smaller war game. It's not hex-based. You have a single board. And it is the capital city of the Twilight Imperium universe, under siege by up to 6 players playing different races. And it's actually, for those who like trivia, based on a Dune game published by Avalon Hill back in the late 70s. But when Fantasy Flight Games bought the game design, they could not acquire the Dune license, so they said, let's make a Twilight Imperium. And they did. Daniel, what is the biggest difference between Twilight Imperium and Twilight Imperium Rex?
The biggest difference? They're entirely different games.
Exactly. Where do you want to start? Tell us about it.
Oh, my God. Where do we want to start? Well, obviously, it's a much smaller map. Much fewer people playing the game.
I think it's really like the elimination, the almost total elimination of luck in the game. I think there's very little luck that's involved in the game. It's like what you were saying earlier. It's very, very similar to the Game of Thrones game, I think, in that it's all about how you place your pieces, where you decide to place them, and how many you decide to devote to battle.
What's really fascinating about Rex is that every single round, you can move one area, one group of troops to one location, and you can place more troops onto one more location. That means you have two things you can do every round, which means if the game runs a maximum of 16 rounds, of 8 rounds, you have a total of 16 actions throughout the entire game. So unlike Twilight Imperium, where you can BS around and where you can take your time and hold back, if you are wasting a turn on Rex, you are losing the game. Stacey and Nick, what do you guys think about Rex?
You have to be a lot more strategic in that game. Like, you have to know from your first turn how you're going to win or what your goal is. Like, I had that. Like, I knew my race. Like, I was the Hakan. I was the cool cat people. Woo! And so my thing I knew at the start was I would win if there was no victory. So I knew from the start my goal was to stop anyone else from having that possible victory, which meant I had to throw myself into battle just to stop other people, or I would have to have an alliance just to screw other people else up, and that was my whole goal. I would just pick fights with people. I'm like, you're not gonna win, and it helped because I knew that, and like I saw how people were playing, so I could play off of that.
Well, you
that's
just touched,
how I won.
You just touched on it, which I think is one of the probably the best things about the game, is that alliances are actual paper alliances. That when you enter into an alliance with someone, you give them a card, they give you a card, you are not allowed to break that alliance, you are not allowed to even have your pieces where their pieces are until the next time you are allowed to create alliances again.
Which is fantastic, because you could desperately want to break an alliance. You could be an alliance that's poisonous and dragging you down. You could win the game immediately without them, but you can't break it until a certain card comes up, and it's beautiful and magical, and it hurts
fantastic.
So much.
Yes.
Nick, was this your first time playing Rex?
Yeah, it was.
What was your reaction to it, especially knowing it was in the same universe as Twilight Imperium?
I do like the universe. I love, you know, the whole collection of races. I really enjoyed it. Like, the theme is pretty good. It's, you know, marks the sort of kickoff event of Twilight Imperium, which is the, you know, the invasion of the capital city and destroying it. I found it's, I played the Universities of Jolnar again, which made another appearance in Rex. Didn't do as well. but I like them. They have, most of their abilities are intel-based. They know what the next influence card is. They know what strategy cards are being bid on. And I leveraged that in the beginning, winning my first two fights with no casualties by knowing, you know, what people were playing, or by having a traitor in my pockets. But I couldn't really keep that going. for the rest of the game, and so my strategy became hold a stronghold and ally with someone with more strongholds.
It doesn't help that we played one rule very, very wrong, where people are supposed to get more money per round, and like just automatically, and we were not playing that properly. So in the last round, a few of us were broke to the point where we were out of the game. It didn't break the game, but we definitely, next time we play, we want to make sure we get that right.
And I'm not sure how much it actually affected this particular game. Like, I think it affected it in the last round, but it wouldn't have changed much. I think either way, Stacy was going to win just because of the stalemate that we had put on the board. And that we had got the basically the knot that we had all gotten ourselves into.
Aside from the fact this game makes you hate your neighbors so much, which we'll get to in a moment, my favorite thing is the Soul Fleet, which is a giant group of ships made of very intimidating plastic hovering on the board. And every turn you draw a card and it moves a certain number of spots. And if you are in its path, you are destroyed by it. So it becomes a game of, I want to hang out here to hold on to this spot and get this influence or get this power. But if I hang out for too long, I risk getting bombarded by this fleet. It gets even better because the person playing the Soul player knows where the fleet is going next and can either tease where it's going or hide the information. And it makes you feel powerless. You may have a huge stack of guys waiting to attack, but if this thing's approaching you, you got to run. You have nothing else you can do.
There's two things that are amazing about it, because one, you are correct, it does make you feel powerless. Unless you are perhaps the Soul player who knows where it's going, or you have a certain card in the game which allows you to direct where the fleet is going, in which case you feel immensely powerful. You feel like a god.
Like, for example, when the Lazics are on your doorstep, like knocking on the door, like, hey, how's it going, guys? We're going to take it over.
That was a good segue, Tyler.
And only for Daniel to just blow my fucking army sky high because he felt like it.
So the race Tyler was playing starts out with no presence on the board. He has to airdrop all of his troops in to wherever he feels like attacking or, you know, controlling, and thus it becomes very obvious where he's going, what he's doing at all times. Tyler dropped how many troops?
A bunch.
A lot. It was a pretty large stack of cardboard that was sitting right on my doorstep. I had the card that controls the Soul Fleet.
It's like Intel Report or something like that.
Yeah, I can't remember what it is, but it allows you to make null and void the actual amount of movements the Soul Fleet will make this turn, and instead, you name a number, and they move that many spaces. Now, my decision was either, well, am I going to fight Tyler to the bloody, bitter end and lose a bunch of troops and have to deal with this, or do I play this card and in one fell swoop annihilate his entire army? Well, I went with option B. And that was one of the best reactions I've seen to anything I've ever done in a game. Because just, once again, we all, and I'm sorry, but we just want to make you feel bad. That's all we want to do.
Daniel had a couple of war crime level
experiences. Oh, yes, he did.
My favorite.
He did that a couple times. Not just to me.
The last turn of the game, the Sol forces are sitting in their, basically the stronghold they start in. After a battle, or during a battle, Daniel plays this shield shattering card, which makes that stronghold vulnerable to the Sol fleet. And so the Sol forces got bombed by their own fleet on the last turn, and didn't change the victory at all. It was purely spite.
See, this is actually... No, it did change the victory, because Jacob, I believe, would have won in his alliance at that point.
I was allied with Stacy, and as a two-person ally, we could have won the game if I had held on to at least that stronghold. But by Daniel spitefully breaking my stronghold, my troops were bombed, I lost, and Stacy won by default. So Daniel did not do that to win the game for himself. He did solely... out of spite to hurt me.
Oh, yes.
And I don't blame him, because personal. me winning Rex on that game is so much less memorable and exciting than Daniel pulling one of the dirtiest, nastiest, and greatest tricks I've ever seen.
We have to rewind this a little bit, because at the time, I had my last two troops were the troops that occupied that space, because in order to use this shield-shattering card, you have to have at least one troop within the space that you are shattering the shield at. So I had been completely wiped off the board at this point, due in part to the fact that Jacob decided to break the alliance we had earlier in the game that could have sealed us a pretty early victory.
Interjection, you were dragging us down in such a huge way.
Yeah, see, that's the thing.
Never forget the Mazics.
The very next turn with enough troops to fight off what you claim was dragging you down. I could have brought it back.
See, that's why it's so nasty, because it started off as a three-way alliance with me, Daniel, and Nick. And when Nick and I both agreed that Daniel was dragging the team down, so we ditched him. And I decided that I could not win with Nick, so I ditched him for Stacy and still lost. Oh, but you can continue, Daniel.
What I'm saying is, we could have won with that alliance. You screwed that up, so really, I mean, it was justified. I think everything was justified at that point.
Tyler and I made an alliance to stop it, because we didn't want to win. So you went after Daniel.
I went after Daniel.
I went after Nick and took him out.
Well, and that was what was really interesting, is they almost won. Daniel, Nick, and they're Jacob were really, really close to winning. Mm-hmm. And so Stacy and I, we fought at the beginning, but that's because I literally didn't have anything else to do.
And I had the least.
Yeah, and she had so it was like, okay, I have to kind of go for her, because she's kind of.
That's what's so fun about this game, because, you know, obviously there's so many alliances that can happen, that can break, and etc. And the game is so much about controlling 5 points of real estate.
And it's very, very difficult
that
to control
these alliances.
5 points.
Well, these alliances live and die with who controls what points on the map. Because the reason Jacob broke this alliance with me and decided that I was dragging them down was because Tyler came in and took over the one piece of the map that I owned that Jacob needed.
Well, I think what was even more kind of interesting about the whole thing is Stacy clearly was just trying to survive, because I've played as the Hakan before in Rex, and I won the exact same way. It's one of the I rarely win any games, and I won solely because the game was over and nobody else had won yet. And but in this game I played as the Lazeks, and they're in such a weird position, because they're in a great position to make money, but they're not in a good position to actually control part of the board.
Here's why one of the great things about Rex, and why all the races are so beautifully balanced against each other. Tyler was the Lazeks, which like the Imperial Overlords, which means that every single time somebody wanted to buy a strategy card, because in special abilities, the money they spent on it would go to him. And every single time people wanted to deploy troops to the board, the money went to Stacy and the Hakan. So the idea is that by doing certain things, you are literally funding your enemies. And by doing other things, you are unlikely assisting or weakening yourself against certain other enemies. So the entire game, if Twilight Imperium is a huge space warfare opera thing, and Rex is a knife fight. You are up close and personal, and you are stabbing people in the face, to the back. It's, you know, seeing Saving Private Ryan, where the guy gets stabbed very, very slowly.
Yes. Into the heart? Yeah, yeah. It's awful.
Rex is the fun version of that.
Really, the alliances is one of my favorite parts about this game, for a couple of reasons, actually. The first is that, like I mentioned before, you trade these cards, which are a sort of weaker version of your racial ability. So there's a tangible benefit to being in an alliance, unlike most of the war games where it's just, you know, a verbal contract. And the other is that it can actually be more vicious than like in Twilight Imperium, which has this whole assembly system, and you have political, you know, laws that you're trying to pass, and you have these representatives who could be assassins trying to stab each other. Rex is still more vicious than that, because the winning conditions get more difficult the more people in your alliance. So for a solo person, you're trying to control 3 out of 5 strongholds. For a two-player, you're trying to control 4. If you have 3 people, you have to control all 5. And so what makes this happen is the reason we started cutting people out of our alliance and rejoining is because if you're 2 players and you hold 4 alliances between you and your third doesn't hold any, then they're just gone. I mean, it just makes it way more, it's a political knife fight too.
I do like alliances a lot more in Rex. Just, it was fun that I had an alliance with Tyler, then I also had an alliance with Daniel, but they didn't have an alliance with each other. And what's really cool is, even if you do win on an alliance, you have a traitor card where if you meet a certain requirement, then you can win as long as you have the highest number. And I thought that part was really neat.
See, I'd recommend Twilight Imperium to any gamer who wants a big, exciting game full of color and flash and wants to get away with friends. I recommend Rex a little bit more hesitantly, because the game is so mean.
It's one of the meanest games I own. I mean, I was basically wiped off the board in round 2 or 3. I mean, I was completely off the board. All of my guys were dead, and I had to buy them all back. But by the end, this is what's so crazy about the game. By the end, I actually controlled single-handedly more strongholds than anybody else did. We still lost, but I still controlled two, and everybody else controlled one apiece. So it's so easy to get back into the game.
But it's not, when I say mean, though, I don't necessarily mean like it being easy to get wiped off the board or easy to lose fight. I'm talking about how to play Rex effectively requires a certain level of cruelty.
It gets personal.
It's a nasty game. It's like Twilight Imperium, the scale is so big that when you get in a fight with somebody, it's like, oh, this is just a big space battle. In Rex, you can imagine you have like 20 troops on a street corner being pinned down by a sniper, and you kind of picture the sort of close quarters nastiness of it. You can you can taste. It tastes like Afghanistan or Iraq if you want to get
One of the squad leaders is a traitor.
Yeah,
and that's the horrible part is that you devote all this time to this one battle only to find out that one of your dudes is a turncoat and you automatically lose the battle.
Tyler, describe the actual battle system. I think it's really
battle system is actually kind of like poker in a weird way. Both people kind of devote a certain amount of troops on the board physically to the battle. So if I have six and Nick has five, it's 6-5 in physicality. And then what we do is we take these like little boards, these little secret boards, and we bet how many we want to like give to the battle. And so it's like Nick might choose to only sacrifice three guys. I might choose to sacrifice five. And then at that point, it becomes, how much did you bet? But then your leaders come into play as extra points that count towards troop counts. And you've got battle cards that also increase either your troop counts or kill the enemy leaders, which would then decrease the troop counts. And it's all of this math that's like this back and forth math. And it becomes very, very interesting very quickly.
And what's great about it, even though it is mathy, it's really visual and easy to resolve. And what's really gross and awesome is that if you lose a fight, every single troop in the battle dies. But if you have 10 troops in play and you bid 9 and you still win, all 9 troops you bid are gone. So you're gambling with your troops' lives.
You're leaving yourself open for the next attack, which is a definite strategy in the game, is to look at a battle and say, okay, there's these two big armies. Mm-hmm. They're going to sacrifice a lot of guys, so I'm just going to pick off the leftovers. Mm-hmm. Lay siege very quickly, very easily.
Well, I know at a certain point, actually, when you were attacking me to take over that one stronghold I held, it was very interesting because my strategy on that end was like, basically, I have to throw everything I can at you. But you, at the time, had to throw everything you could spare at me. Because at that point, you would also have to keep the stronghold that you took. Whereas my only objective at that point was to get you to go away.
Yeah. Yeah, and so like in my case, I devoted a ton of people towards that battle. You didn't have quite as many, but no. I had to make sure that I kept 5 or 6 left over in case somebody else tried to come in there.
You needed a way to keep that stronghold, because if you didn't, then what was the point of even going there?
And to go with the sort of poker theme a little bit more is it's even poker down to the cards that you choose to pick to play. Because certain cards cancel out other cards. Mm-hmm. And so, like, I was in a battle with Jacob, a really important one, where Sol had two... I actually was fighting him on two fronts. He came to take over the helipad, and so I said, okay, screw it, I'll take over his little home turf. And so I went there. So we had two different fronts going on our little war thing. And on the first battle that we did... I was so nervous, and my heart was pounding, and I knew yours was too, because you had already played everything, and I knew exactly what you were going to be playing, or I didn't know what card you were going to be playing. And there are two different cards that allow you to kill the leader that I can think of right now, Energy Rifle and the Bacterial Weapon. And there are two defensive cards that negate each one. I think one's a shield and the other one's something else. And so I had both defensive cards in my hand, one of each. But I didn't know which one he was going to play. And the only way I was going to win this battle is if I played the right one, because otherwise he would have killed my leader. And so I had to completely guess. I had to just guess what he was going to use, and I happened to guess the right thing. And I honestly have never felt more satisfied in any game I've ever played, because it was so nerve-wracking and so important at that point in the game.
And it was immediately followed by my most satisfying moment of the game, where you unleashed one of your highest-ranking leaders against me, and I knew it was going to happen. I knew since we were having these two fights, I was going to win one of them because he was my traitor.
Yes. And he knew I was going to use both of them. He just didn't know which one it was going to be in.
All right. So I want to start wrapping things up a little bit. Let's go around the table. Daniel, in the if we want to compare Twilight Imperium and Rex directly, which one do you prefer? Which one would you recommend to your family and friends?
Oh, boy. Okay. So, honestly, I really, really enjoy Rex a lot. Twilight Imperium is a game I love. It is a lot of fun, and it's a great way to destroy 12 hours out of your day. But I have to say I would rather play Rex. And actually, that's probably the game I would bring around to my family and friends as well, because you're not gonna... It takes a certain breed of person to want to play Twilight Imperium. To want to be like, alright, I'm going to block out 12 plus hours out of my day, and that's gone. That's just... That's what I'm going to do. And be okay with that. And, whereas Rex, you know, obviously has a shorter playtime, and I guess the personal nature of a lot of the battles leads to, I guess, a lot of good, fun discussion afterwards. Because I don't think you're going to forget anytime soon when I destroyed your shield and lost you the game. I just don't feel like you're going to let that go. And Rex gave us that.
How about you, Stacey? You got to play one or the other this weekend. What do you pick?
Twilight Imperium. Just because there's a lot more that you can do. Like, I really feel like I'm in space. Like, I can build things. I can go explore new planets. I just feel like it's a whole nother world. And I don't mind putting the time forth. But if I had to recommend to other people, it probably would be Rex, just because not many people, again, have the stamina for that game. But Twilight Imperium, hands down.
Or the budget, I should point out.
Or
that.
The budget.
Or the budget.
Rex is a pretty standard $60 game, whereas Twilight Imperium is $100, and you don't want the expansions, which are about $60 a piece. So you're looking at a lot of money to get Twilight Imperium up and running to the way you want it to. Whereas Rex is a one-time commitment with no expansions. How about you, Nick? What do you prefer?
Twilight Imperium all the way. It's just so massive and so crazy, and just everything is thrown in there. Rex has a couple of systems that I think are, you know, obviously more sleek, but I think the lack of... Almost, there's a point where Twilight Imperium, the lack of, you know, elegance in it is one of its strengths, because everything is thrown in there. You have all kinds of... You have technologies, and you have research, and you have a political system, and you have all these wars, and you have just absolutely everything. Yeah, if I had to recommend something to friends and family, I mean, obviously, Rex is a shorter game. I would try to probably build from Rex to Twilight Imperium, because I'd like to get more people involved. But, yeah, the simplicity of Rex, the only problem would be it is just vicious. It's mean. And I have seen my very nice, sweet, non-gamer friends tear into each other over a game of Battlestar Galactica, just viciously like I've never seen before. And so that kind of game is yeah, it's certainly interesting.
Real quickly, before I get to Tyler, I think it's interesting you talking about how full Twilight Imperium is compared to how stripped down Rex is. I think it's really interesting examples of completely different game design, whereas Rex is about as sleek and as simple as you can get, where it's all about these very direct mind games and simple math, whereas Twilight Imperium doesn't have a single mechanic that is difficult or hard to wrap your brain around. It just has hundreds of them. Right. So I'm like, what would you guys like? What do you prefer? Do you like games that like give you those sandbox of options, or do you like, or do you usually prefer the more elegant design? I know this is off topic. I'm just curious.
I think generally I do prefer that more elegant design. It's just that Twilight Imperium is just the exception to everything. It is just its own unique beast.
All right, how about you, Tyler? Which one do you prefer?
I love them both. I love them both for different reasons. I think I prefer Twilight Imperium, if only because it's everything I ever wanted out of something. Like, it's great because, yes, I get frustrated with the game. Yes, it's maddening sometimes. Yes, it's, you know, I never win and I'm probably never going to win. But that's okay, because I get to create the story of this civilization and its expansion or its non-expansion, or and it's... And for me, as a I'm a storyteller, I'm a writer, and I'm a director, and for me, it's like everything I ever wanted out of a science fiction film in the palm of my hands, and I get to control every aspect of it. And I think that there's something to be said about the elegance of that in and of itself. I think, yes, the gameplay itself is very messy and it's extremely hard to explain, I think, to people. I think there's a lot going on, and I think just the sheer number of things that you have to pay attention to is almost too much for most people. I think what Rex gets really, really right, though, is taking a very, very simplistic system of you need to be here, here, and here. How do you do that? In Twilight Imperium, you don't have that. It's you have to try to figure out how to do these things. Like, you just do it. And there's something I love about that. There's something I really love, and I love all the races and building the galaxy. It's a different game every time you play it, which is really, really interesting to me. I would definitely recommend Rex more for, like, friends. Probably not for my family, because my family probably wouldn't care for either of these games. I think Rex would be a little too harsh for them. And then I think Twilight Imperium, I think my dad might play a 12-hour game of Twilight Imperium with me, but I don't think there's really anybody else. But I think Rex would be simpler to learn, simpler to understand. I think the goals are a little bit easier to grasp. Twilight Imperium is probably my favorite game ever, so it's like I gotta pick that every time. So
it's such a hard question because it's so different. I mean, mm-hmm. if you ask me right now, I'd say Rex, because it's such a shorter game, and I love the games where you can be mean. If you're a listener to this podcast, you listen to us actually play City of Horror, which is probably second only to Rex. You know, I take it back. Rex is the second meanest game of all time. City of Horror is the meanest game of all time.
Because you literally throw people to zombies. So yes.
But, and I'm always a fan of meanness. I like games where you have to make those big dramatic choices. But I'm not going to lie. Every few months, I'll get the itch Twilight Imperium, and the itch has to be scratched, and it's the only game that can do it. Well, and like, it's a truly, like... truly, like, it's magical. Like, Twilight Imperium, Rex is a great game, but Twilight Imperium is magical.
Well, actually, what I was about to say, as Tyler was talking about how, you know, it's everything he ever wanted out of a science fiction movie. For me, Twilight Imperium, when you look at it, and you see it for the first time, especially as a new gamer, and you see that all spread out, like, in some picture on BGG or something like that, and you're like, oh my god, that looks insane. It actually delivers on that. Like, it delivers on, I guess, the splendor you think it would be, seeing that picture of all of these pieces, these really interesting pieces all over this giant board with so many players, and it is really one of a kind. It's really interesting how it actually works out the way you think it would.
And that's Rex and Twilight Imperium. So we're going to start wrapping things up now. Do you guys have any last questions, comments, or maybe even a recommendation for our listeners? Games or even non-games, if something has struck you?
Anyone? I'm saying if you really like Twilight Imperium, like a game that's similar, it's not as complex, but it has a longer length, is Eclipse. I definitely would recommend that. It's like a, I think, more European style.
Explain European style for the noobs listening.
It's just like a lot more simple, and you have like all the little wooden blocks and everything, like, so you can actually see, oh, I have like this and this. And I mean, Twilight Imperium had that with the cargo goods, but it's just a lot more, and you fill up your board. Like, I have a standard little sheet, and I know I have this, this, and this, and I can only spend this much. It's a lot more tangible. A
lot more fair and less random, yeah. Right?
Yes.
How about you, Nick? Any recommendations for our crowd? Does not have to be connected to me. Anything you want to recommend right now?
Anything to recommend? Oh, man. Well, to go off, there is a sort of... Fantasy Flight does another sort of... It's kind of like a fantasy Twilight Imperium, which is called Rune Wars, which I haven't got to the table very much, but it has... it's like up to 4 players, and it's basically, you know, fighting over victory points again as sort of family fantasy races. It's hex-based, like Twilight Imperium. You have, like, the familiar strategy cards and all that. And it's got its own sort of unique diceless battle system. I'd love to get that to the table more often and have, you know, a 4-player all-out war with that game.
Well, let us know.
All right.
How about you, Tyler? What have you been playing that you can recommend?
Coup, and more Coup. I love this game. I think it's probably my favorite simple pocket card game that you can own right now, and it's basically it's an offshoot of Resistance, right? Okay, yeah, it's an offshoot game of Resistance, and basically you have like 6 players or something like that, and you all have two roles. Each person has a role, which is a card, and you're all competing for this money that's in the middle, and you use that money to kill other people's people and take over this city. And all the roles have their own, you know, specific strategies. Like Duke can, if you're a Duke, you can take money, you can tax money, but then people have to call you out on it because there's only so many Dukes in the game, and it's all a game about bluffing because you can say you're a Duke, but you're not really a Duke. You can say you're an ambassador, but you're not really an ambassador, or you actually are an ambassador and somebody can call you on it, and once they do that, they lose one of their guys if they're wrong or. If they're wrong,
it's the best lying game we've played recently.
Yeah, that's why I love it, is because it's a game where it tests how well people can lie. Like I play with my girlfriend, and like she's not a particularly great liar, and so it's like she kind of tries to play the game straight. But we played like 10 times in a row the other night, and I played the first 3 games completely straight, and every single time I would knock like 3 people out just because I played the game completely straight, and I was getting lucky draws and everything, but. The game is just so much fun. I mean, it's the only game that I can think of that I can play over and over and over and not get sick of it.
It's the best $15 game we've ever
played. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
so I'd like to interject here. I was also going to recommend Coup, even though I haven't played Coup, because as of today, this recording, the Kickstarter for the Coup expansion is live.
Really?
You can get Kickstarter edition of Coup and the Kickstarter edition of the expansion for $30.
That's exactly what
and
I'm going to do.
I backed that so fast. But as of the airing of this, who knows how many days will be left. But yeah, get on that. That's cheap.
It's an excellent game. I mean, there's really nothing... I think it's better than Resistance, in my opinion. But
I guess I'll recommend The Phantom of the Opera. It's actually a French game, and the title's in French, but don't ask me to speak French, I'm sorry. It's a very simple two-player game. One player plays as the Phantom of the Opera, or someone pretending to be the Phantom of the Opera, who's terrorizing the diva at a French opera house. The other player plays as the investigators, who are trying to sort out who is behind these attacks and behind scaring the diva. And it's a very, very simple... It's pretty much Letters from Whitechapel in 10 minutes. It's a very, very fast deduction game, and this kind of game where one mistake can derail you, so you gotta play it very cleverly. It's a very much a dueling mind game. Also, it has a cool theme, and if you happen to have a person in your life who enjoys musical theater, you have a great soundtrack for it, too.
I would also recommend Letters from Whitechapel, since you mentioned it, because that game is also an amazing party game.
Oh, believe me, we will soon be talking about Letters from Whitechapel and Fury of Dracula in the near future. All right, I think that brings us to a close for this episode of the Diecast. So let's all say goodbye, starting with...
Oh, see you guys later. Thanks for putting up with my shit.
What's your name, Tyler?
Tyler. My name's Tyler. My name's Tyler Major.
This is Nick Fuffy. Thanks for listening.
Yep, this is Stacey. I'll totally start playing games.
And this is Daniel, your co-host, at a Supersonic Man on Twitter. And we'll leave it with...
This is Jacob Hall, your host. I am at Jacob S. Hall on Twitter. And until we come up with a better closing line, we'll see you guys later.